Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Need expert advice on your family's health? Speak to us today at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
I think a lot of you enjoyed Dermot Martin. A texter says he would be one of my favourites at a fantasy dinner party. Well, I think right now, Kate Middleton would be a lot of people's favourite at a fantasy dinner party. So the Where Is Kate saga, as we were saying earlier, goes on. And at this stage, it is kind of a frenzy. A lot of ordinary people becoming obsessed, ever crazier theories. And for a lot of people, it seems to be acting as a gateway conspiracy. So Mariana Spring is the BBC's disinformation and social media correspondent and the author of Among the Trolls, My Journey Through Conspiracy Land. And she joins me now. Hi, Mariana.
Hello.
So for those who don't know the background to this, what's the gist of this story, Mariana?
So I think it's important for people to understand the way that this story has built over several weeks.
Yes.
Until this photo came out and was released for Mother's Day last weekend by the Princess of Wales, by the family, showing her with her kids, and people spotted how it had been edited. And, you know, celebrities, high profile people, they do edit photos a lot. The difference here was this was a photo that was being really, really scrutinised. People spotted quite quickly that there were areas where it appeared to be edited. There's no suggestion or evidence that it was generated using AI technology, for example, but rather that it's been edited using software. You can see, for example, Princess Charlotte's sleeve is slightly missing, or you can see how there's a blurry hand on Prince Louis's side, or the zip doesn't quite align. Lots of clues like that. And so people started pointing those out. Various photo agencies issued a notification, a kill notification, which means they decided this has been edited to such an extent we are actually not going to distribute it, we're going to withdraw it. And it just fed into this already very active social media conversation about the Princess of Wales, because she's had this medical procedure back in January, and she, as they said, has not been seen in the public eye. But that vacuum of information and people wanting details, often asking genuine questions, has led to this absolute frenzy online of online sleuths of people spotting stuff that doesn't quite seem right, and then also conspiracy theories that are just totally contrary to the evidence.
So you've studied a lot of conspiracies over the last few years. What's the anatomy of how this developed from, like, in one way, kind of low stakes gossip into this frenzy of conspiracy theories?
Yeah, I think it's a blueprint that I've investigated quite a few times now, and I talk about it quite a lot in the book as well, because actually, you know, whenever anything happens where there's that sense of mystery or people aren't quite sure what's going on, we now can turn to social media to look for answers. And there are good things about that, because people can ask legitimate questions, or they can point out, you know, where an image has been edited or where something doesn't seem quite right. And the problem is that kind of everyone can be an amateur sleuth, and they can start sort of adding things together that don't quite make sense, and pointing to the wrong conclusions, or conclusions that just don't have any evidence to support them. And so what happened here was, you know, people looking for information, speculating, gossiping, like you say, people then start posting videos. Every single bit of information or photo or statement that's put into the public, into the, you know, that's released, is then, you know, it's chewed up and unpicked, and everyone starts spotting things that they think are wrong, or there's something a bit odd, or they can't quite figure out what's happening. And then it kind of all builds to this point where this image is released, and everyone just goes into overdrive. And you know, it's people posting on all kinds of different social media platforms. It's X, which we used to call Twitter. It's TikTok. It's Instagram. You know, people want to get involved and take part. And you know, there are serious questions about the impact that the kind of frenzy can have on trust in the palace in this case, and the relationship between the royals and the public. But also there are real people at the heart of this. You know, I see this all the time. To be at the centre of one of these frenzies is not a very nice thing, no matter how famous or royal you are.
And in terms of, excuse me, in terms of the mainstream nature of this, the subject matter, and maybe the kinds of people who have barreled into it, is this a new kind of area for conspiracy theories to get into, and a new audience maybe for them?
Yeah, I think I think a lot of us like to think that we're kind of immune to conspiracy theories, that it's just a minority of really committed people online who spread this stuff. But actually, I think that we can all be really vulnerable to it, particularly when we're curious or we have genuine questions or we're interested or we're worried even. I mean, I think some people actually are genuinely worried about the Princess of Wales, and that's why they're getting involved in this stuff. But I think and, you know, we think quite a lot at the BBC and the job I do about when we cover these kinds of conspiracy theories, because when they're kind of quite fringe or not that many people are seeing them, it doesn't seem very important to expose and investigate what's going on. When that line is crossed is when they've gone sufficiently viral that, you know, most people will have encountered some kind of conspiracy theory or content about the Princess of Wales, I imagine, in the past week. And I think that is a kind of mainstreaming of that kind of speculation and gossip. And, you know, there are certain publications, bits of the press, the media that are a part of this kind of ecosystem, if you want to call it that. You know, there's speculation and then it's kind of feeds its way into mainstream coverage, then everyone's talking about it, and it kind of all goes around in this cycle. And it's important to cover stuff that's in the public interest, but also there is always that line between when does speculation and genuine questions tip into unfounded conspiracy theories for which we just don't have the answers or the evidence. And I think as well, it's a really important lesson in the desire for information now. And there's that line between privacy and between transparency and people, you know, the royal family or other celebrities or whoever else kind of putting out information into the public eye. But right now, because of social media, I think people are much more inclined to want those extra details, maybe in a way that they didn't 10, 20, 30 years ago.
Is there a timeline or a typical kind of arc to a story like this? Like, where does it go from here? Does it peak and kind of just fade away? Can the palace stop it or anything?
I think it quite depends on how the social media conversation is fed or what it's fed with. On the whole, I tend to find that the more that is put out there, whether it's a statement or a video or a picture or whatever it is, the more that the amateur sleuths in particular will pore over it and obsess over the details and unpick it. And so in some ways, silence and not saying anything sort of quells the speculation to some extent, but then at the same time it's that vacuum of information that has led to this in the first place. So I think with this situation, I think the conspiracy frenzy will continue on social media, certainly in the kind of committed section online. I think the average person will probably move on to something else and not necessarily be engaging with this so much, but until there are kind of more details about what has happened, I think that it's basically impossible to stop that social media conversation now it's begun.
I've heard a few people say, this is my first conspiracy theory. Like, is there an element here that these people are now going, okay, conspiracy theories, this is fun, and that they might be more susceptible in future?
Yeah, I think that's something that's important to talk about here. And I talk about it in the book quite a lot, the kind of difference between the cynical non-believers, the people who spread conspiracy theories because they want to grow a following or to make money, and then the people who are the true believers, people who genuinely have kind of found themselves hooked on conspiracy theories for whatever reason. Maybe they've had something legitimately bad that's gone wrong, they are looking for answers, they are very distrustful, and you often see how it's kind of, they're not necessarily, they don't immediately jump into the hardcore conspiracy theories. You often start on the fringes with a conspiracy theory that might superficially seem quite harmless, but actually can be your sort of gateway drug into this world. And I think it's important as well to understand the role that social media plays in this, because the way that the sites work mean that if you post this kind of content, you're getting views, you're getting likes, you're getting clicks, engagement. People then say, oh, hang on, other people are interested in what I have to say here. Maybe I could post about something else and I could get some more likes and some more views. And part of that kind of validation and the way that we now get our social cues of what's acceptable or not acceptable from the online world, I think that plays a big part here. And it's a big risk to people who, you know, might find themselves drawn into some much nastier conspiracy theories when they actually just thought they were kind of beginning to get involved in a bit of gossiping or speculation.
Yeah, yeah. OK, Mariana Spring, disinformation and social media correspondent with the BBC and author of Among the Trolls, My Journey Through Conspiracy Land. Thank you very much. We'll take a break.